But bring another shenda here. It's good. What we need to do is to bring here. Bring the shenda right in front of me. Ah, there we go. This way. There we go. In honor of Yom HaTzmaut, it's going to be next week. And in honor of Yom Yerushalayim, that's going to be in less than a month. And in honor of the fact that a lot of people, unfortunately, here in this Beis HaMedrash, are on the last stretch of their Yerushalayim experience, I want to speak about the bracha Yerushalayim Ircha. We're working our way through the Shemoneh Esrei, not exactly in order, but I feel it's appropriate to speak about Yerushalayim Ircha. It is a unique bracha, and it's something that, especially this time of the year, especially for those of you that are leaving Yerushalayim and going back to Shmutz Laaretz, and you want to remind yourself what a schus you have to be learning in the city, and how unusual it is that in our generation that people take for granted that they can pick up their bags, get on a plane, and come and learn Torah in Yerushalayim, where for literally for 2,000 years, people used to daven and used to pray and used to pine for the schus and the hope that they could study over here, all the way back to Yehuda Levi and the Rambam, all the way to the Gedolim of the previous generations, the Talmidim of the Gra and the Baal Shem Tov, that wanted so badly to come over here, and we take it for granted. We cannot take it for granted. And therefore, I want to talk about Yerushalayim Ircha to remind ourselves of the schus of what we have to be able to learn here. But first of all, I want to tell you a story. And that is the first time I gave this particular share, this particular twist to Yerushalayim Ircha, was just under 2 years ago when I was the Yom Yerushalayim speaker in a place called Boca Raton. There's a school there. Any Miami people? Whatever, it's from the Weinbaum. Anyone? So I had this big speech speaking in the Weinbaum Yeshiva. It was actually, I was speaking there in the morning. The night beforehand, I had a big gig on Miami Beach. And the day before that, I got on a plane here in Israel, in Tel Aviv, in Ben-Gurion. And I had a flight that would take me to to Frankfurt, and from Frankfurt to Miami. This is with the Lufthansa, airline company. So this is anyone ever here actually been to Frankfurt Airport? Okay, so describe it to us. It's an airport. Anyone have anything more interesting? What? Huge, big, disgusting, frightening Teutonic airport. Jawohl? Yeah, that's what it's like. Okay, it's huge. So I asked my travel agent, how am I going to make the connection? I only have 45 minutes to get from gate to gate. And she says to me, you run like a mashugana, and you'll make it. Safia Bromwitz. Okay, you run like a mashugana, and you'll make it. So it's okay. Now, those of you that have been hearing my stories long enough know that Menachem Nissel and airlines do not get on with each other. In general, my advice to you is, if you hear I'm getting on the same plane as you, switch planes. Things go wrong when I fly. There's always stories about me and planes, and they tend not to be such exciting ones. For those of you that are Torah Traga fans over here, so you should know that off my first Poland trip, I sat next to Rabbi Reichman. It was also Lufthansa, and we also were going to, this time we were going to Berlin, and from Berlin we were going to fly to Vilna, to Lithuania, and Rabbi Reichman was next to me, and there's like a third person over there, and this woman is walking down the aisle, and she has a heart attack, right? She faints right on top of Rabbi Reichman. So in a bizarre way, it was humorous. Like, obviously, we felt terrible for her. And it ruined my flight, first of all, to have a sick woman on the flight, and secondly, that the two of us had to stand for the rest of the flight. I mean, she was not going anywhere. They had about 5 or 6... You were there! Rabbi Reichman was right there. So this is one of the things. So these things tend to happen to me. And I had this bad feeling. We get on the plane. And I had this bad feeling something's going to go wrong. And sure enough, as we get onto the runway, about five or six rows in front of me, a gentleman starts vomiting. Now, not just vomiting, we're talking about full machine gun spray. This is like the real thing. He's vomiting all over the place. And it's really, and this is a Lufthansa place. We will not have this here. And the stewardess comes along, picks him up, literally throws him out the plane, and this is it. Now, what happens? Who can figure this out? What happens if you throw someone off a plane in a runway? What happens next?
Luggage.
They have to take his luggage. So for the next hour, they are taking off his luggage and cleaning up his mess. And I asked the stewardess, what's going to be with my connecting flight to Miami? And she says to me,
you will have to spend the day in Frankfurt.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. No problem. Nice Jewish boy. Hanging out with a bunch of Nazis, I can deal with it. It's okay. You know what I mean? No problem whatsoever. I love Germany. You know, this is a great place. The truth of the matter is, to be very honest with you, I actually, Germany today is not such, it's not what it used to be. I'm actually going to hopefully be there this summer with NCSY. And there's a lot of Kirov going on over there. But as a Brit, the English hate the Germans for a totally different reason. Anybody know? Well, we hate the Germans not because of world wars. We hate the Germans because there's a custom every couple of years. It's right. England plays Germany in soccer. It always looks like we're going to win. In the end, they beat us. So here we are. Whatever. It's not fun. I'm here. I'm going to go to Frankfurt, and there's nothing I can do about it. So now, this is actually there's a point to the story, and the point to the story is that what happens next? I mean, obviously, on the plane, I'm going to do something that makes me look normal. I'm going to try. Basically speaking, whenever you get on a plane, you always have to ask yourself, what should I do so the person next to you should think I'm normal, right? That's what you do. Okay. So therefore, you do not do antisocial things like play Sudoku. Or whatever it is. Or you know what I'm talking about? The people that are scared? The scared types? You're talking about the scared types. The scared types, you can always identify the scared types because they sit there, they actually watch the presentation at the beginning when the stewardess gets up and describes all the different ways that you're going to die. Right? Okay? It's like it's a little routine about because no one actually survives anything. They always say, if you're going to land at the Atlantic, so we strongly advise that you throw out the kid first before you go off. You know, and Continental is proud to present to you a complimentary slide so you can go to the Atlantic Ocean where the sharks are waiting for you. So this is like, it's like, the whole thing is ridiculous. Normal people just, avoid eye contact with a stewardess who is feeling highly self-conscious and know how ridiculous the whole thing is. But these people, they watch. And then they spend the rest of the flight looking at the screen, that annoying green screen. You know what I'm talking about? Where you go, watch it, din-in, din-in, din-in. They watch the little thing so they can know exactly where they are at any given moment. You do it! I know you do, right? And then what's the purpose of knowing where you are? There's no other logical reason except to know this is where I'm going to die. You know what I mean? So most normal people are not interested in knowing it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're flying over Greenland. But some people are. They want to know exactly. This way they can actually freeze to death before they land. By the way, have you ever noticed on these planes, they give you all kinds of irrelevant information, which you watch, right? Like how cold it is outside the plane, okay? Why do you want to know how cold it is outside the plane? This is obviously you want to know, so you can know. So Avery Ratz wants to know exactly, will he freeze to death before he lands the plane? Then, of course, they tell you the wind tail speeds and stuff like that. They think you're the freaking pilot and stuff. Hey, whatever. Anyhow, the what? Avery does the calculation. He studied mathematics in some Harlem college, and this is what he gets into. Fine. Okay. So as I get on the plane, and I'm going to do something normal. What am I going to do? So I actually had the safer. And this is the point of the story. I have a safer that I've been treasuring for a long time. It's exactly 2 years ago. The story is I had a safer called the Letters of Revolver. My Rebbe, Baruch Hashem, was zeicha to learn by Revolver for many, many years to go to his Vadim. And this is the collected letters. And I open up the first letter, and before I tell you what the first letter is, because it's going to blow you away. This first letter is going to blow you away. It's directly connected to the share. But the first letter, before I tell you the first letter, I just want you to know how my story ended. Because this is just an incredible thing. I arrive in Frankfurt Airport. I get off the plane. And I'm trying to figure out what am I going to do. I know whatever. Maybe I'll go to the Kever of the Pnei Yeshua. There's a lot of kfarim over there. And, you know, it's just amazing. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff. There's over 1,000 years of Jewish history in Frankfurt. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And there I see this little German guy. He's walking like this. And he's carrying a sign that says, Miami. So I said to him, you know, excuse me, sir, what is this sign all about? So he looks at me and says, if you want to go to Miami, you must follow me. I said, what are you talking about? He says, you must follow me if you want to go to Miami. I look around, and I see that I'm surrounded by Christians. Lots and lots and lots of Christians. Apparently what had happened was, there was a Christian tour group on my plane going from Tel Aviv to Frankfurt, and they were supposed to go on from Frankfurt to Miami. There were so many of them that they actually held up the flight for 1.5 hours from Frankfurt to Miami to accommodate this Christian tour group. Abaisai, I know this is not a Kodesh here, but never in my life was I so happy to be with Christians. Here I am, you know, I'm going like, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, you know, like, Jesus saved, you know, the whole thing. I was at Moses in the vest. Like, I was so excited to be there. It was just incredible. And this itself was an ace. I have to tell you, because you may not know much about German airlines, but the least you should know is that alles ist pünktlich. We are always on time. When I was growing up, they told a story about the plane that went from London to New York, a Lufthansa plane. They're halfway over the Atlantic, and the captain goes, ladies and gentlemen, we are sorry to inform you, but all the engines are presently not in working order. We will be landing in the Atlantic Ocean in exactly 4 minutes and 27 seconds. On behalf of the captain and crew, we'd like to thank you for flying Lufthansa. Okay, so this is what happens over here. Okay, let's get back to the share. Thank you for laughing, John. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Okay, some people actually find these things funny. Anyhow, the point is that I take out Revolver's letters, and I read the first letter. And the first letter, believe it or not, begins with the following words. My dear Talmud, I think this letter was written in the 60s. He was writing to a Talmud to try and give him chizuk. My dear Talmud, as I write this letter, I am presently on a plane. Are you hearing this? I'm on a plane flying from, can you guess? No. Revolver does not go to Miami Beach. Wrong type of godel. Okay? No. He was going from Zurich to Stockholm. He used to do a lot of kiruv in Sweden because he was there during the war. And he's writing, he says, I'm thinking to myself, what is the difference between flying on a plane or going on a train? In those days, you want to go long distance, so those were your two choices. And he answered with a beautiful concept. He says that when a person travels long distance, if you travel by train, you are stuck with all the physical, earthly trappings of being on terra firma, of being down here on earth. If you're in a train, if something goes wrong with the train tracks, you're in trouble. If there's a herd of cows that are crossing your train tracks, you're in trouble. You have to stop in every single silly village. You have nowhere to go. This is not a good thing. This is not a good thing at all. But, says my Rabbi, if you know how to fly, if you can get up into the sky, if you can go higher than the clouds, there, alles ist gleich. Everything is smooth. Everything goes easy. And Revolver concludes that the challenge of life is to learn how to fly. And this, of course, is his mashal. His mashal that a Torah, a Ben Torah, lives on a different plane. And this, of course, is directly connected to what it means to live in Yerushalayim. So I just want to ask four questions, technical questions, about the bracha of Yerushalayim Ircha. And then I'm going to tie it back in to this idea of what it means going by train or going by plane. First of all, why is it that the bracha begins with Vitl Yerushalayim Ircha? That Vav, the Vav HaChibur, is completely and totally redundant. The other brachas begin Shema Kolenu, Es Temach David Adcha, Hashivenu. Here there's a Vav. The Vav is called the Vav HaChibur. Why does it begin with the Vav HaChibur? That's the first question. The second question is that you have a whole bracha that talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu having a city. Yerushalayim Ircha, this is your city. We are in God's city. So I want to ask on a deeper level, Mazeh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an ear. What exactly does it mean, conceptually, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the infinite God, and he's a Melech, and maybe we can deal with the fact he has a bias, a base of Migdash, and so on and so forth, but why do we have him, so to speak, needing a city? And we want him to have his city. So why? What does it mean, Yerushalayim Ircha, your city, Barach Mitashav? What exactly is the necessity for the city? The third thing is that, what is this bracha different from the next bracha? Quite frankly, Chazal gave us, the Anshkin gave us 19 brachas, 13 needs, 13 requests, and they split. One is Yerushalayim Ircha, and the other one is Es Tzemach David Avtucha. Why do you need two? If the whole thing is a messianic process to say, bring back Moshiach, and he can, whatever, and he can come back to the capital, Yerushalayim. There's two separate concepts. There's Yerushalayim, and there's Moshiach. And you will notice, and this is fascinating, if you haven't noticed before, it's fascinating, that we ask for David HaMelech in both brachos. Okay? Yerushalayim Erech Barachim in Tashuv. The Tishkan Baseicha Kashe Debata, Vene Isa, Bakar Bimani Binyan Olam, the Chise David Abdacha Meher Seicha Tachim. You should put David and Melch back in Yerushalayim. What's the next bracha? Es Tzemach David Abdacha Meher Tatzmiach. By the way, this is one of the examples where English translations are so bizarre, because I think the Art Scroll talks about King David sprouting. I never understood exactly. I always had this image of being like the David and Melch being bald, and then, you know, asking for everything to come back, you know. Let the Davidical dynasty sprout. You know, the whole thing, everything comes back. Whatever, I'm not exactly sure what that means. But it's Tzemach David Adachim. So we're asking for David and Melch twice. And then another technical question, what exactly is the Chisei David Avdachar? We're asking that David and Melch should have a Chisei, should have a throne. So thrones seem to be irrelevant. Those of you that actually, whatever it is, yeah, it's always funny. You know, kings and their thrones, the thrones of a king, it always seems a little bit weird. We need a throne for the whole idea of a throne room and a king. So that's okay for kings that have ego problems and like to have their crowns and their scepters and their things and their Purim story stuff. But why does a Kadosh Baruch Hu need that his David HaMelech should have a throne? The Chisei, David, what do you need the Chisei for? Why is that important for us? Whatever, technically speaking, a king needs a place to sit. But what's the big deal about a Chisei? So you got a Chisei, then you got the bias, and then you got the ear. You got these three steps. Chisei, bias, ear, and the fourth step is going to be Mashiach. So I want to show you how this thing works. But before I do that, I want to introduce to you the Yesod. What's the big Yesod over here? So everyone here in this Beis HaMedrash knows that the number 7 is the number that takes 1 to 6 and raises it to a different plane. You were taught this in kindergarten. The number 7 takes the numbers 1 to 6 and raises it to a different plane. The most obvious example is Shabbos. Shabbos is called the day which takes Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday and Friday, and raise it to a higher level of existence. How does that work? So, by the way, I cannot do this with you now. Anyone that wants me to explain this to you after the shir, because the shir is running late. But if you look at me for a second, the Vilna Gaon makes Sunday to Friday as three different dimensions. He goes like this. It's like this. It's Sunday, Wednesday, Monday, Thursday, Tuesday, Friday. And Shabbos brings the whole thing together and raises it to something higher. How does that work? So it's a complex cheshbon. It's not really relevant to the shir. But that's what the Gra does. The Gra says, as you all know, Sunday and Wednesday are matched up. Monday and Thursday are matched up. And Tuesday and Friday are matched up because the first 3 days of creation are the creation of potential, and the last 3 days of creation are the creation of actualization. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday is the creation of light, the creation of water, and the creation of land. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday is the actualization of water of light, which is the Ma'aris, the sun and the moon and the stars, the actualization of water, which is the fish, and the actualization of land, which is animal and man. So that's the 6 days of the week. Shabbos takes the whole thing and raises it to Kedusha. That's example number one. Another example, I have a mission in front of me in Pirkei Avos. I apologize that I'm rushing this now, but I don't like to schlep out this class. And that is, this is actually where the Maharal speaks out this concept. The Maharal says, you have a whole bunch of sevens in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos. This is where the Maharal teaches us, the number seven takes the first six and raises it to something higher. So the seven, there are seven things that make man into a goylam, and seven things that make man into a chacham. What's a chacham? Chacham is a wise man. What's a golem? What? That'd be the golem of Prague, right? Or some of the guys that we teach here. What is a golem? Ethan, where are you? What's a golem? Yeah. You're from Chicago. What's a golem? The beast! Is he here? Is he here? With Daniel Megan. Okay, whatever it is. But the point is, a golem is incorrectly translated as an idiot. A golem is a chacham who has not been actualized. The Gra says that golem and ha-chacham are both gematria 73 to teach us that a golem is someone that could have been a chacham. He could be very bright, but he never actually actualized his potential because he didn't do things of acts of wisdom. Now, what I'm about to say to you now, I'm going to rush through, but those of you who are chachamim, which is actually everyone here, will understand that what I'm saying is the Maharal saying something incredibly deep. It's insanely deep, and there's a lot to speak about this on a separate time. But he says if you count from 1 to 6, you'll notice these are all things that you can learn in your college classes. What makes a person a chacham? Ein medaber lifnei mi shegadol mimenu b'chacham minyan. You listen to someone who's wiser than you or more experienced than you. Ein nichnas l'toch divrei chaver. When you and your chavrus are arguing, you let each one say your viewpoint, you listen, and then you argue back. Ein nivul l'hashiv. When somebody presents a point to you, you don't have to answer straight away. You can think it through, and then you can answer. Shol ki in the meshiv kalacha. You always are relevant and to the point. Ayma rishon rishon will achon achon. When you've got a bunch of things going on, you treat it in an orderly fashion. And you're intellectually honest enough to say that you don't know something. So this is 1 to 6. These are all tools for knowledge. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that I'm skipping through. But everything I said so now, you can learn in a college class if you're learning about how to study and how to learn. There's nothing unique about this. But the seventh one is what the Maharal calls, it's the Shabbos. It's the one that takes 1 to 6 and raises it to a higher level. And what's the seventh one? The seventh one, you will not find this in a college class. And the seventh one, you will not find it in the mentality of the secular world. And that is, Umayda al Ha'emes. Umayda al Ha'emes means that you will admit that what is true, meaning, says the Maharal, that you will realign your whole life, you will make changes. If something is true, then it demands that you reassess your whole life. And this is something that is uniquely teredic. In the secular world, you can teach business ethics, you don't have to be ethical yourself. That is something that is unfortunately, it's a mentality that's out there. There was a British philosopher, economist, by the name of Bertrand Russell, who thrived in the 1950s and 60s in the London School of Economics, which was Britain's English equivalent to Yale. It was like a top university, it still is. And he used to teach business ethics, and he used to teach morality and ethics, but he himself was a mushkas. He was a disgusting person. I could tell you privately some of the things that he did, but even by Chicago standards, it was considered disgusting. And what can I tell you, Ethan? This is not good stuff. Not good stuff that he was doing. So one day, the heads of the London School of Economics brought him in for censure, and they were going to tell him off, and they said, how can you reconcile your behavior with what you teach? You behave like an animal, and you teach ethics and morality. And he answered famously, just because Pythagoras was a mathematician, does it make him into a triangle? That's what they say. In other words, Mazik Kashur, what is even got connected to what I preach to how I act? And we say not that way. Moidel Emes means that you raise all your knowledge. This is what we do here in Yeshiva, is that we try and teach you instincts and values, and the challenge is for you to take the knowledge, take the information, to take the Ashkafa, and to internalize it and make it part of your personality. Now, that's man, and Shabbos is time. Now, what about space? This is, of course, the point I want to make. Because Baruch Hu created space just like he created time on six dimensions. He created space in six dimensions, and he created knowledge in six dimensions. North, south, east, west, and up and down. These are the physical dimensions of Earth. These are dimensions of which a train, like Revolver says, has to travel through. But there is a seventh dimension, and that takes the six directions and put them together. Says the Rashba in his Tshuvas that he describes Shabbos as the Heichal HaKodesh Vizman. This is a quote from the Rashba. Heichal HaKodesh Vizman. The Rashba is telling us that in space, Hashem's bias, that is what takes the whole physical world and raises it to something higher. And here is the point that I want to make, is that the Beis HaMikdash down here corresponds to a Beis HaMikdash upstairs. And the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak, Ma'is Hashem Kain Yodecha, says the Gemara in the beginning of Tzuvos. Hashem creates the higher worlds with his right hand. He creates the lower world with his left hand. But the Beis HaMikdash is where the two hands come together. Says the Ian Tefillah, that in exactly the same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a Beis HaMikdash down here and a Beis HaMikdash up there, he created a city down here and a city up there. What's that? Yerushalayim. There's Yerushalayim Shalmata and Yerushalayim Shalmala. How do we say this in Tefillah? Says the Ian Tefillah, the Yerushalayim Erecha. That Vav, says the Ian Tefillah, is the Vav HaChibur. It's your Yerushalayim that connects upstairs, that connects downstairs. So now let's talk this through. So everyone has to stay focused for another 2-3 minutes, and everything's going to come together. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he created the higher worlds, and he created the lower worlds. The higher world is purely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The lower world was purely for man. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it not to be that way. He wanted man to bring God down into this world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take over this world and turn this world the Sakin Olam, the Malchus Shakai, the goal. What's called your mission, if you choose to accept, is to bring the Shekhinah down and then pervade it into this world until everything becomes Hashem Echad. That's our job. But to do that, there's got to be steps. So the first thing he needs is a bias. So how do you have a bias? So you need to have a bias to bring the bias. You have to have the bias upstairs, and you have to have a bias downstairs. You need a Beis HaMikdash. Now, a Beis HaMikdash downstairs only becomes a place for the king to live in when you have a kisei. The word kisei, the idea of a kisei, is that you're shayach to the place. If this room is my bias, and there's no chairs, then I can live in here day and night, I have no shaykhus to it. The moment you put a chair and you sit in, then you have a shaykhus to your bias. So the way it works is as follows. When HaKadosh Baruch created the world, he wanted a dira b'tachtenim. So he needed a bias, and the bias needs a kisei. David HaMelech is the one who facilitates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have this kisei, that he's actually shaykh to his bias down here in this world. But you all understand that without the ability to be mashpia, without ability to express yourself beyond your bias, then you have no malchus, and you have no koach, and you have no influence. The idea of a city, the concept of an ear is what's called the lowest common denominator. It is the basic expression of a person to be able to exert his malchus. A king has to have a kisei, that makes him shayach to his bias, and a king has to have a city, that's where he has his influence. The minimum malchus that you can have is your heir. Okay, then afterwards it has to spread out to the Medina, but the ear means I have a place that I'm a shpia on. So when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a city, or Lahavdil, a king has a city, or a Medina has a capital where the king puts his palace, that means this is the beginning point of my Hashpah. This is where the Hashpah begins. How does the Hashpah continue into the Medina? That's the job of Mashiach. That's a separate bracha. That's a senach of Avdecha Meher Eset Tzmiach. So David HaMelech over here has two jobs. His first job is to, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's representative down here to give him a kisei, to give him a foothold here in this world. Once he has a foothold in this world, the foothold only is meaningful if it has a Koyach Hashpah. That's why you need a city. So the city and the bias and the kisei all feed off each other. This means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a place down here and the ability to mashpia beyond that. Then you need l'sak and olam b'malchus Shaddai. That's a separate bracha. That's really the last of our needs. After that, Shema Kaleinu is so to speak, Shema Kaleinu is the 13th need. It's like a joker in the pack of cards that puts everything in together. Our last need is the connective need of Klal Yisrael to take HaKadosh Baruch Hu's dira b'tachtonim, his kisei and his bias and his ear, and then to mashpir to the four corners of the world. That's a simach of Avdecha Meher Eset Tzmiach. And now, I want to conclude with the following. I want to tell you something, a little story. I have a lot to say over here. I have a lot to say, but I'm looking at the clock over here. You all live in Yerushalayim, and whatever it is, we're here in Torah Tragah, we're here in Bayit Vegan, and a lot of things we take for granted. And the fact is, as Rav Volba, if he was here today, would say to you, if you want to learn how to fly, and you want to get flying lessons, and you want to live beyond, so this is a city where it breathes L'mayla min ha-teva. It breathes the world of miracles. So I want to share with you a comment from my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Shapiro. And I want to tell you something, and again, I'm not exaggerating. When I heard this comment from him, it changed my whole attitude to Yerushalayim. It gave me a whole new, different appreciation of what it means to live in the city. Rabbeisai, you have 5 or 6 weeks left in the city, for many of you. I want you to look at it differently and to express the new way of looking at it by saying the Shnayim Ircha with a different kavana. What's my story with Rav Moshe Shapiro? So this story goes back now about 10 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. My friend, and my good friend Yeshua Hartman and I, we took a group of students to Poland. And we took a group of students to Prague. And at the end of the trip, it was Pesach afterwards. On Shvi'i Pesach, we went to visit our Rebbe, Rav Moshe Shapiro, and we told him that we were in Poland, and we were in Krakow, and we were in Prague. And he asked us, what thoughts did you have? He asked us, he often does this, he asked us, so what did you come up with? So I made the following comment. I said to him, it's an interesting thing. I've lived in Yerushalayim. Now I've lived in Yerushalayim for 25 years, whatever it is. I've lived in Yerushalayim a long time. And it's a funny thing, because I'm in Krakow, and in Krakow, a lot of you have done this, you go into a shul called the Ramah Shul. And there in the front of the Ramah Shul, do you remember this? There's a little plaque that says, according to our custom, this is where the Ramah used to daven. You remember this? So I told him, when I came in and I saw that little plaque, I got the shivers. And I started feeling incredibly connected to the Ramah. And then a few days later, we were in Prague, and you go into the Maharal Shul, with all the legends of that shul, and all the stories of the shul, and all the miracles that happened in that shul. And unfortunately, the massacres that happened, that shul has more history than any other shul on the planet. You go into that shul, and there's a little place, according to our custom, this is where the Maharal, I push it, I'm shaking all over. This is where the Maharal was. I go to Prague, I feel connected to the Maharal. I go to Krakow, I feel connected to the Ramah. I live in Yerushalayim Ir HaKadosh. What happened in Yerushalayim Ir HaKadosh? This is the place where, if there was a Big Bang, the Big Bang began in Yerushalayim and spread it from there. This is called the Eben Shasir. The world was created from Yerushalayim. This is where Adam Rishon brought his first sacrifice. This is when Noach brought his sacrifice. This is where the Akedah happens. This is where Yaakov has his dream. This is where the David HaMelech came. This is where Shlomo HaMelech built his base in Migdash. This is where the Hanukkah story happened. This is where the Kohen Gadol used to go to Lifnei V'Lifnim. This is where the Churban happened. This is where the Nevi'im had their famous Nevuos. This is where the Ramban stood. This is where the Arachaim stood. This place has got so many stories and so many secrets, and there's so much power to this place in every single stone and every single place that you go. And yet, and yet, and yet, and yet, you and I live here, you take it for granted. This is me speaking to Rav Moshe Shapiro. So what did I expect him to answer? What would you have said? Or what would you say? You say, you know, you can get used to anything. You just get used to it. You take it for granted. I thought he was going to say to me, obviously, when you go to something for the first time, but you know, I worked very hard to try and feel that the Kotel is special. It's not. I don't feel the way I did when I was by the Maharal, or the way I did by I was by the Ramah. So listen to what he said. Rabbi Isai, I'm asking you for a favor. This next line I'm about to say, please do not forget this. Please do not forget. You can tell this to as many people as you want. I'm asking you, this next line I'm about to say to you, my Rebbe said, it's a passing comment. It is such an impact, it's such a precious line for me. I'm asking to please listen to this line and try and be mizbeinin in what this line means. He said to it was me and it was Yeshua Hartman, Rabbi Hartman. He said to us, Menachem Tidama, you should know something. I'll translate it directly into English. He said this to us in Hebrew, but I'll translate it directly into English. He said, when you look directly into the sun, you see nothing. Kishata mistakel yashar b'toch ha-shemesh, ata lo ro'eh klum. If you look into the sun, you see nothing. What do you mean? What does he mean? He means Yerushalayim is so insanely intense with Kedusha. There's so much in here that you can't see a thing. You pashut cannot see a thing here. You got to go to Tzfat, you know what I mean? Or you got to go to Prague and Krakow to start to see Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. But your Shlai is too much. You don't see a thing. You miss it completely. That's the city that we're in. And I'm saying to you, it cannot be that way. And I had this thought, those of you that were Birkas Achama. So I was at Birkas Achama at the Kotel. Anyone else was with me at the Kotel? Okay. So you'll remember that there were these people who were giving out these little, they were selling their Birkas Achama sunglasses. You know what I'm talking about? Which was a little bit of a scam, because Rabbi Yasha says you can't make the bracha. The whole thing, you got to be able to see the sun. But these are like these sunglasses to look at the sun. But the thing is, what's the idea of these sunglasses? Is that you can look at the sun if there's filters. And sometimes I think to myself that you got to start looking at your Yerushalayim with filters, and then you can start to see little things. And you'll notice that your Yerushalayim has a disproportionate amount of simple people who are not simple. Simple people who are extraordinary. You don't find this with the same intensity in other parts of the world. Here, Yerushalayim, it's overwhelming. The air in Yerushalayim is so holy that it manufactures extraordinary people in huge amounts. And they all hide themselves with their simplicity, but you can catch them. You can catch them. And there's a little challenge that you have in the small amount of time that you have in Yerushalayim. There's a challenge that we have as we appreciate what it means that we have this chus to learn in Yerushalayim. This is a challenge that we have every time that you see the bracha, Vit Yerushalayim Ercha, the chibur of Yerushalayim Shemala down here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lives here, this is his city. It's just not built the way we want it to be built. We just don't have Dawud enough to give HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kisei is not here. So the Hashpah is not in its place. And that's something we need to daven for, that we can be able to see the intense Kedusha that's going on in this place, and the Kedusha should be able to mashpia to the rest of the world the way it's supposed to be. So I want to conclude and give you this challenge. You get to Yerushalayim Ercha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give David HaMelech the schus to rebuild the Kisei in his bias, and Yerushalayim should be the Makar of Hashpa, and then we'll be Zeicha Be'ez Hashem Yisbrach for the next bracha, that David HaMelech will finish up the job with Mashiach spreading the light of Yerushalayim to the four corners of the world. May we all be zeichet to see this meher v'yameinu. Shkayach. Thank you. Good Shabbos. Thank you. Are you prepared for today?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you guys were not.